Come into the Home Depot and discover the new exclusive line of Husky hand tools. They're improved, affordable, and guaranteed forever. Start with a three-piece plier and wrench set for the new lower price of just $9.88. Add a few new tools to your workbench, even though your workbench may wear out long before these new improved Husky hand tools do. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
An important reminder from Medicare. It's Medicare open enrollment through December 7th. Time to compare plans and see what's best for you. You don't have to change, but it's good to look. And check out the preventive benefits you get after the healthcare law, with no co-pays or deductibles, like some cancer screenings. Savings, too, like over 50% off brand name prescriptions in the donut hole. Medicare open enrollment. Now's the time. Visit Medicare.gov or call 1-800-MEDICARE.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20, because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We want to extend a special welcome to our good friend who's coming into town from the South, Sandy.
Sandy will be here soon. I didn't know where you were going with that. I was like, what?
Sandy's wet and wild. I can't wait till she gets here. It'll be so much fun. So let's, before we just jump in, let's talk a little bit about Chefs for Equality, because that event was a home run.
It was a home run. We've been talking about Chefs for Equality for the last 3 weeks. On Foodie and the Beast, and we were just so fortunate. 60 chefs, 15 mixologists. We raised over $200,000
for marriage equality.
Marriage equality in Maryland. It was, without a doubt, the food event of the year. It was.
I've been
amazing.
Married to Nikki for 16 years. I'm still waiting for marriage equality.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to wait longer
happening.
Than that.
That's not nice.
And we do want to give a shout out to David Hagedorn, because
he worked
tirelessly on that event, and the HRC. Well done, and congratulations to everybody involved.
And we also want to make sure, this was just scheduled this week, on Sunday, November the 11th, we're going to be live, the show will be live.
At New Union Market off of Fifth Street,
Northeast. Union Market is this awesome enclosed market with great little sort of boutique booths, and it's everything from home furnishings to Rappahannock oysters to lamb to
Craig Rogers will
to
be back
everything.
On. It's going to be great.
So it's the 11th at Union Market.
Well, and actually, I just want to say that's the market's grand opening, because the market right now is only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But that weekend is their push to open 7 days a week.
All right. So let's jump into the show. Let's talk about what's going on. Kim O'Donnell is back with us. She's a nationally known cookbook author. She was a Washington Post writer for years. Yeah. And
yes,
then she
sir.
Said, the hell with Washington. I'm going to Seattle.
I'm out of here.
But that's Washington, too.
The other Washington.
She's got another book called The Meat. This one is called The Meat Lover's Meatless Celebrations. It's a year-round vegetarian feast. And
we're going to make a vegetarian out of you.
Despite the fact that I'm a carnivore, we're going to talk to her and find out what's what.
And many of you know who Gail Simmons is. She's the food writer, trained culinary expert. Oh, and also the judge on Bravo's Top Chef. She is coming to D.C., in the next couple of weeks to be on the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show. She's going to be on to talk about what she's doing and what's going on with the next season of Top Chef.
Now, who's this next guy? I don't know.
Who is he? Can you pronounce his name?
Yes.
Can you try? Say it right.
Yes. Chef Victor Albizu.
Yay.
He's an old friend of ours and who was actually at Chefs for Equality, is opening his own restaurant. It's Taco Bamba. I can't wait because it's near my office.
I know, but more importantly, he's got a pop-up happening at Blackjack.
At Blackjack.
And we're going to find out all about
Pearl Dive on 14th Street. We're going to talk about that.
All about it. And many of you who get to travel a lot may have seen Vino Volo in your airports. It's a absolute must stop for great wine and snacks. And they are opening up, I think it's their first, out of the airport shop in Bethesda, Maryland. And we are lucky enough to have Doug Tomlinson and Tristan Kindy to talk all about it. And they brought wine. So pretty good.
And Lest we forget mixed drinks today. Taha Ishmael is the head mixologist at Mike Isabella's Graffiato, and because he's incredibly acquisitive, he's also taken over those duties at Bandolero in Georgetown, and he's going to head up the new mixology program at Kapnos when it opens in 2013. So you're a bit, you should have been born with more than two hands.
Right, you're a busy guy.
So as long as we're talking to you, Taha, how did you get into mixology in the first place?
I got a mixology. I moved to the state. I'm originally from Morocco. Mm-hmm. I moved to the state 1995. I've been also working in a restaurant since then. I worked as the head bartender over 5 years, and me and Mike Isabella, we worked with each other for over 3 years.
I can't believe Mike let you in without him coming. I mean, he doesn't like giving somebody else the mic at all.
So sometimes we got to take away from him,
Right, right. And wrestle it out of his hands.
Absolutely, and that's how we moved to Graffiato and become the head mixologist over there, and mm-hmm. I'm overseeing both restaurants. And
so, are you the guy behind Gin and Juice?
Yes, I am.
That is my favorite drink. Love that drink. And you took it off the menu.
We did. We do a lot of seasonal cocktails. So, we change the cocktail lays very frequently. But mm-hmm. overall, we try to keep it consistent and, more seasonal.
Well, so tell us a little bit about what you're doing over at Bandolero.
Well, Bandolero, right now, we just took over the program. We're just going to go over there, not do a lot of changes. I mean, the cocktail there, they're great. The whole program is awesome. We just want to go oversee it. And
But you've got a heavy emphasis on margaritas.
And
absolutely,
tequilas.
Yes.
And
you've got a good beer list.
Absolutely, yeah. What we do is, we want to keep the same thing we'll be doing. Like, it takes on a classic with a little bit Mexican touch, and do craft margaritas and mezcal cocktails.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your craft margaritas.
My craft margaritas, like today, what we're doing, I brought with me a sample of the Bandolero on tap. Mm-hmm. This is our margarita that we have on tap.
That's Bandolero. Terrible. Pour it quickly.
No, it's not. This is Espolón tequila with fresh lime juice, Patron citronized, and orange. Blood orange puree.
Fabulous.
All
right.
Hair we'll of
pour
the
a little
dog.
Bit for everybody.
All right,
absolutely.
Well, while I'm carrying my headache, let's talk to Kim O'Donnell. All right. So, Kim,
when you were
in here, that's ice in the background.
A lot of ice.
Your first book was The Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook, and you were in about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We were talking about it, but now you're doing meatless celebrations, and sort of kind of looks like, meatless is taking over, but you're a carnivore.
Yeah, I still eat meat probably about 30% of the time. Mm-hmm. So for me, I probably will never become 100% vegetarian. But what I wanted to do with the new book was sort of look at all those occasions when we always think about feasting with the roast beast.
Right.
And how could we do it without?
Was that, are you?
He's looking right at
me.
You.
Is that
right.
What's happening here?
You need to come in here every week because you laugh at all of his jokes. She does.
I love her.
I know you do.
Are you married?
Indeed.
Yes,
that's
is.
Too bad. I'm thinking of dumping Nikki. So
4 could be the lucky number for him. It could work.
That was a good one.
So you were trying to come up with how to make celebrations vegetarian. Because I do think more and more people are going vegetarian. And for the meat eaters, it's trying to do both and feeling satiated. So tell us about how you put this menu together.
Okay.
Or the book together.
Yeah. Here's the deal. 96% of us eat meat in mm-hmm. this country. And so the small, slowly growing percentage of folks who are not. But what's really interesting to me is that of that 96%, about 40% of us are cutting back. So we're calling ourselves flexitarians or part-time vegetarians or whatever label you want to give yourself.
I'm a Presbyterian.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And, or eat less meatarian or whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
But that's what's interesting to me because we are coming to the table more frequently where there isn't just the lone weirdo who opts out of the Thanksgiving turkey.
Mm-hmm.
We are truly dining in mixed diet company and we're falling in love with people who don't necessarily eat what we do. So how do we meet at the table mm-hmm. and have a good time?
Well, but the interesting thing is that you have someone who is a meat eater doing this kind of a cookbook. So, if a vegetarian's doing it, it's, they're sort of preaching to the choir and they're preaching, they're doing it from the hymn book that they know. You're coming in and trying to find ways to make it you know, palatable and enjoyable to a meat eater.
Well, someone said to me, I came here from Richmond and Northwest Arkansas, and someone said to me earlier this week, only a meat eater could make this food taste this good. And to me, it's about delicious first, meatless second. So right. It's not going to be gratuitous vegetarian. It's got to have the mouthfeel, the umami, and all the flavors and textures.
Well, I think that's really, I think in people's mind when they think vegetarian, you know, they just think
rabbit food,
right? Steamed vegetables. They just don't think that it's going to be fulfilling enough. Even if I mean, I love vegetables, but it is hard for me to sort of sell vegetarian cuisine to my family because
yes.
they just don't think it's going to be filling. And honestly, even reading some of your recipes, which we were talking about before the show, they look wonderful, but some of them I'm kind of like, I put a little bacon in there, it wouldn't be so bad.
She even wrote that down.
But I was serious. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I can relate.
Right.
But what I will tell you is that this was such a kick in the pants to write because mm-hmm. it truly was. Well, you know, festive occasions, holidays, this is when we want to yip it up. So I want this food to feel special. I want it to feel exciting.
And indulgent.
Yes. So you're going to find lots of treats in there.
Well, so let's give some examples. I mean, so with Thanksgiving coming mm-hmm. up, mm-hmm. people are starting to think that way. Mm-hmm. How do you replace the turkey?
Well, you don't do it with that fake stuff.
Yeah, whatever the hell that stuff is.
Okay. I talk about that in the intro to my book, about the very bizarre experience of it having a thump on the holiday table. Thanksgiving several years ago, actually, when I was still living in D.C. The two main dishes I have for Thanksgiving is the one on the cover, which is a roasted red onion filled with a pumpkin bread stuffing that's savory instead of sweet.
That's
so
gorgeous.
It's got rosemary in it and nuts, and there's some chard. And so it's this beautiful presentation, and it's also incredibly hearty and feels, you know, not like a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
I serve it with a roasted root vegetable gravy. The other main dish on the menu are delicata boats, I call them. So taking delicata squash, cutting them in lengthwise, you know, in half, roasting them, filling them with a red rice stuffing. So it's beautiful, autumnal, mm-hmm. not that hard, and feels like a main course.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to say. I think also another reason why people are afraid of vegetarian is they're afraid they're going to be in the kitchen for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
So the delicata squash is really manageable. That's mm-hmm. even something you could do on a weeknight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, does this mean going to the store all the time? I mean, can you stock a pantry with sort of, you know, regular items or
absolutely.
Something?
Absolutely.
He knows what's in the pantry or goes to the store. But go ahead. It was a good question.
Oh, my God. Don't patronize me when I'm sitting right here. Pretend I can't hear you. What she said.
Well, you know, first of all, there is a vegetarian pantry that you can put together to plan in advance. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm an extreme, but I'll have five or six different types of legumes and different types of grains in my pantry so that mm-hmm. I can mix and match. They might be canned, they might be dried, but that's going to be a big part of my diet.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to go to the farmer's market once a week? Absolutely. As long, you know, in Seattle, I've got a farmer's market that goes year-round. So
right.
I'm really lucky. But isn't, you know, the DuPont market is year-round, isn't that right?
It is every Sunday.
Yeah. So, you know, it is about sort of planning ahead. And, you know, the thing about with people making dietary shifts is we get into ruts. So this is a way to sort of create a new normal. I'm mm-hmm. not saying 360 or 180,
right.
but little bits.
That's going to be tough at our house.
Well, no, I mean, I've tried to. I'm definitely putting more on the plate. I think grains and beans are a hard sell sometimes for kids. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think they have to get accustomed to them.
But that is true, because we've got the portions of meat are smaller now.
Yes, and I'm smallering.
That's a big a big part.
Can we make sure? Are you doing book signings or
yes,
anything?
Yes. This afternoon, I'm doing one at 2:00 at Hill's Kitchen down by
on
Eastern
Capitol Hill.
On Capitol
oh,
Hill.
Cool.
Right, great, great. All right, wait. We'll find out about more that you're
yes.
doing, and I want to talk about your
yes.
lentil dip when we get back. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Hi, Audi.
Hi, Santi.
Cool new car. And look at that radio.
Finally got myself a brand new car with HD radio technology standard.
HD radio? That's the digital broadcast radio with the new HD2, HD3 channels?
Yep. And my new car has factory installed HD radio with artist experience and iTunes tagging.
Wow, this is cool. I was looking at this on HDradio.com and you did it.
Yeah, come on, let's drive.
HD radio. Now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Oh, are we back on the air? My God, I was busy eating. All right, welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Kim O'Donnell, who has written a new cookbook called The Meat Lover's Meatless Celebrations. Before we took the commercial, we were talking about your book signing today.
Yeah. And but what else? You've got other events happening. I mean, provided this storm doesn't happen.
Yeah, so it's like me against Sandy, right? Mm-hmm. So
don't be a wimp. No matter what happens,
I'm not a wimp. I'm from Philadelphia.
I want you out there signing books.
Thank you.
And where's the book going to be found? It's in all the bookstores.
Yeah,
Amazon.
It just dropped on Tuesday, so you'll start seeing it in your favorite place to buy books.
So you're going to be at Politics and Prose
tomorrow night,
hopefully.
Weather, contingent, of course. Right. And then in Leesburg, there is a cute little cafe called the Shoes, Cup, and Cork Club. Mm-hmm. They recently got a Meatless Monday restaurant thing going on there.
Cool.
And Thursday, I will be at Tabletop in DuPont Circle.
Fantastic.
You get around.
I do.
All right. Well, let's make sure the book is called The Meat Lover's Meatless Celebrations.
It's gorgeous.
It's by Kim O'Donnell. It's a beautiful book.
It is. It's really beautiful. Great recipes.
Thank you.
Kim, thanks for coming back
in. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to have you.
All right, so Taha, let's go back to you. This is a crazy drink.
This is a spicy margarita. I love it.
It is. Actually, there's nothing spicy to it. It just, we use a lot of fresh ingredients. So that kind of gives you a little bit of heat to it and also blood orange.
Okay.
So just, it's a plain, we use Espolante Tequila Blanco with Patron Citronage, kind of like a triple sack, something a little bit higher end of like orange liqueur with fresh lime juice and blood orange puree.
Well, it's lead in because it's spicy enough to kill. And let's talk about your Day of the Dead celebration at Bandolero. That's coming up on the 2nd.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Day of the Dead, we're doing a big party on the Day of the Dead when we're going to be hosting a DJ. A DJ is going to be in where the light's going to turn down and then the music.
How much lower can the lights possibly be in that restaurant?
Right.
I mean, Bandolero is pretty dark.
You wake up, they turn the lights back on.
I mean, I love Mike Isabella, but it is dark in there.
It is, but once we have a DJ and there's going to be some more lighting, so we're just going to turn a little the lights down, and then we're going to turn the music up and just enough to wake the dead.
Excellent. I love it. And what drink are you making next?
Next one right here we're doing, it's called Sangre. There's going to be featuring on the Day of the Dead. We're trying to keep it as red, as bright as possible. Mm-hmm. So we're using right here, it's Casa Noble Reposado with a little bit of Campari and sweet vermouth Carpano and topped with, finished with cranberry bitters.
Excellent. All right. Great. Well, shake that up and let's get on to
Here come the judge. Gail, are you on the phone?
Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Well, I think everybody probably knows Gail Simmons. She's a nationally known food writer and trained culinary expert. And oh, by the way, she's really the anchor judge on Bravo's Emmy Award-winning Top Chef. And you're coming into D.C. for next week's Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show. And so we're glad to have you talking about Top Chef and everything else.
Thank you. That's right. I can't wait to get there. I'll be there next Saturday.
I know. And we want to talk about all the things you're going to be doing at the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show. But we thought we'd start a little bit with Top Chef. And, you know, D.C. has a lot of Top Chef alums. You know, you got Mike Isabella, Spike Mendelsohn, Brian Voltaggio, Carla Hall. I mean, there's a lot of people.
I was speaking to someone else the other day, and it occurs to me it's possible that, I don't want to get in trouble for saying this, that D.C. might have the most successful amount of alums that there are.
Well, you know why?
It's because they're all past guests on this show.
Well, that's true. It has a lot to do with this show.
Sure, that's why. No question.
It does. But are you surprised that so many top chefs are coming from the D.C. area? I mean, given like New York and California and the level of chefs there, do you think it's surprising?
Perhaps it is. You know, it's funny that until really the last couple of days in preparation for coming to D.C., for this particular trip and in preparation for the new premiere of our next season, which premieres just a few days later on November 7th on Bravo, I've really only just started to realize it. And to me, yes, it is sort of surprising, but I think it's fantastic. I mean, if you think about how many chefs we've had on the show over the last 10 seasons.
I know, it's amazing.
And our spinoff, Top Chef Just Desserts, Top Chef Masters, you know, those at least those four, but there's been others as well. Of great talent that come out of D.C. I mean, it just proves to me that D.C. is really a world-class eating city these days.
It is becoming more and more so. I mean, hopefully when you're here next week, you'll get to try some of the great things that people are doing here.
Well, one of the things that I think is common, even with Brian, who's more of a Brian Voltaggio, who's a little quieter, they all have huge personalities, and they're all artists.
Yes. That's for sure. Well, and interestingly, they all are doing very different things. If you think of Brian and then Mike Isabella, very, very different restaurants. Spike Mendelsohn, you know, is making pizza and burgers, but he's doing it just so well. And then Carla, who started off with a catering company and now has, you know, a national talk show. So,
right, and you guys have been the springboard for all of them to other shows.
I'd like to think so. I'd like
Absolutely.
To give them a little bit of credit.
Gail, can you help us?
Give ourselves a little credit?
Well, I mean, it's well-deserved. Well, so let's just talk over the years. I mean, it's 10 seasons is a tremendous amount of time.
Isn't it unbelievable?
It is.
I
mean,
every time I say it, I have to pinch myself.
Well, it's exciting, and it's done so much, I think, for the restaurant world. I mean, it's really helped educate people on dining out. I think it's changed things tremendously. And it's put chefs in the spotlight, which is, you know, equally terrific. How do you think Top Chef has evolved over the years?
Oh, it's so amazing to think back to that very first season when I remember my first day on set as clear as day. We sat down, and that was... not that I recommend anyone going back and looking at that first season, because my hair is not excellent.
Okay.
But
we'll keep that in check.
Yes, thank you. But really, you know, the format of the show was very different. And we were still feeling out what the viewers wanted from us. You know, Bravo had this great idea for a show. I was working at Food & Wine. I still am. And they came to Food & Wine to partner with them. And we all sort of went to San Francisco together to create the first season. I remember sitting down next to Tom that first day and looking at him and thinking, what are we doing? I mean, what if this is a huge failure? Because we were certainly not the first cooking show in the world. There's been thousands before us. But we were the first to really, I think, shine the spotlight, not just on chefs in general, but on the life of the professional kitchen at the highest level. Mm-hmm. This wasn't a cooking show about home cooking. This wasn't a show about a chef teaching you how to cook or making food easy. It wasn't about sort of... dumbing down restaurant food for a viewer in any way. It was about the real life of young professional chefs who have completely made their livelihoods on living in kitchens and breathing this passion that they have. So I think that, you know, what really is the most amazing thing about the show is that we have really sort of thrown open the door to the kitchen. And that was a door that until we were on air, no one really got to see behind. And I think that's been really exciting because we were about the professional fine dining restaurant and the kitchen. What has changed? Wow, so much. I think that even if you look back at that first season, the contestants were very different.
Mm-hmm.
There were mostly professional chefs. Most of them were line cooks at really excellent restaurants. But there were still a few slightly more amateur cooks thrown in there for good measure because we weren't sure what our viewers would respond to. So there was a home cook. There was a girl who was still in cooking school. You know, there were people at various levels of talent. And if you look at the show now, 10 seasons later, every single contestant on our show is the executive sous chef.
Right. It's serious. It's very serious.
The head of a very high-level kitchen. That doesn't mean that they are cooking fancy food, but they are all, you know, several years into their careers as chefs, not as cooks, and there's a difference. And I think that's what our show's about.
Well, beyond the professional side, though, you get to know these people as people. You get, you know, with all their quirks, too.
Sure.
And we have to ask. We have to talk a little trash. Has there ever been anybody on the show that you really dislike so much you'd be willing to say so?
Like somebody from the season coming up who's from D.C., perhaps?
Not from the season coming up. You know, very few, I have to say. And the reason is different than you're going to think. It's not me being nice. Because I'm relatively nice, but I can also be not nice if I need to be. Mm-hmm. The truth is that the reason there are people that I dislike is because we, the judges table, we actually don't get to know them. You as viewers get to know them at the same time we do. Once the show has already been shot and edited and put on the air, when we are filming the show, we shoot it several months before it airs, mm-hmm. Most of it except for our finale, and we have almost no contact with the chefs when we're shooting. We only see them when you see us seeing them. So that means...
So you have no idea about the drama. You don't know what's going on.
No idea. We see them in the elimination challenge, and then we see them at the judges' table when they are, I assure you, most of the time on their best behavior. Mm-hmm. That is the only contact we have with them. We don't see them in the kitchen. We don't see them back at the house. We don't see them in their private interviews. And those are the moments that you are watching all cut together with their storyline of the show, when you get to know them. So I will be sitting on my couch, you know, in a few weeks from now, watching the show while it's airing live at the same time you are, and I'll be saying, oh my God, I had no idea that that person did that or this person is that way. Mm-hmm. I really don't know them very well until after they've shot the show. And after that, the ones who I might not like because of the show, you know, I just don't keep in touch with. But,
right.
But the people I do like, I do keep in touch with.
And you're out, right? You're out.
Exactly.
You're dead to me.
Sort of like that. Or I just, you know, I don't have the opportunity to talk to afterwards. We talk to them at the reunion show that we make. Mm-hmm. And again, that's, you know, in a studio environment. So if there's someone who I have a hunch I'm not going to really love as a person, it doesn't affect me and it doesn't affect my judging because we only judge on the dishes in front of us. That's all we have.
Right.
Well, right.
I was hoping for a little more trash talk, but okay.
There were certainly some unsavory moments on the show, you know, chefs, but I don't think it's really about them being terrible people. I think it's about them in the heat of competition, and television makes you do crazy things.
Well, that's a good segue, because now we're going to talk about in person, because people are going to be able to meet you in person on November the 3rd at the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show. So
now, all your events are ticketed, so people do have to buy tickets.
That's
specifically.
Right. You have to buy tickets to my events. I'm doing a series of events with Tom Colicchio, and you can get the tickets at MetroCooking.com.
And I hear that a bunch of them are gone already, so if anybody's interested, they better jump on it.
And you're signing your memoir.
So I'm signing my book. That's right. I wrote a book. It came out about 6 months ago called Talking With My Mouth Full.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun to write, and it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun to sort of take it out to the world. So I'll be there with my book. I can sign my book for you, absolutely. And then Tom and I are going to do a cooking demonstration together.
And what are you guys going to make? Do you know?
Well, Tom and I have this little tradition whenever we cook together for events like this, we like to show, you know, the cooking in many different ways. We're very different cooks. Obviously, Tom is a world-class chef. He's been cooking and has some of the best restaurants in the country for 20, 30 years. And I, as much as I'm professionally trained, I went to cooking school and I cooked for a while. You know, my cooking when I cook publicly is really for the home cook. So we like to do two different things. I also happen to love desserts. So what we like to do is we pick a couple of ingredients that work for both the savory and the sweet side of the kitchen, and Tom will make a dish or two using those ingredients in a very chef-y restaurant-style way, a savory dish. And then I take those exact same ingredients, and I make a really home-style delicious dessert with them, but using those same ingredients. So it's sort of like many ways to use those ingredients, both making your main course and making your dessert.
Oh, well, that's a fantastic idea. And that must be fun for you guys to get up there and do that together in a sort of...
It's great to get to cook together, you know.
Low pressure kind of situation.
Yeah. Well, there's still some pressure. There'll be an audience, but it'll be really fun because it's much more interactive and people get to see us cooking, which you rarely get to see, of course, on Top Chef.
Of course, and you're not being judged, which is even better.
I hope, anyway.
Well, Gail, thank you so much for joining us today and for chatting with us about the next season and your book. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week at the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show.
I hope to see you guys there. Thanks for everything.
Thanks. Right. Have a great day.
Take care.
Great. All right. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm looking at a gorgeous cocktail that is going to be mine. And I'm already digging into Victor Albizu's tacos. So we'll be back in just a sec.
An exciting new and much anticipated restaurant opens in Georgetown on November 7th. It's Farmers Fishers Bakers, a sister restaurant to Founding Farmers. An American menu of fresh foods offers an extensive and diverse selection of farmhouse and regionally inspired dishes for lunch, dinner, or weekend brunch. And there's a sushi bar unlike any other in D.C. With secure underground parking, incredible views of Washington Harbor and the Potomac River, Farmers Fishers Bakers is the best new reason to dine out in Georgetown. Visit FarmersFishersBakers.com to learn more and make a reservation today.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's
going on? June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis here on 1500 AM.
And a giggling Victor Albizu. He's giggling.
Well, sitting next to me, why? I don't know why you're giggling. It's not manly. Victor Albizu is a chef. It's a chef that we've known for a long time. Yes, he was at BLT Steak. He's been doing a bunch of stuff. But now he's going into the taco biz.
I know. Why are you going into the taco biz? That's such a departure from
because
what you were doing
delicious.
Before.
I'm
well, they are
one right
delicious.
Now.
Probably exactly why I'm doing it is because it's such a departure from what I've done in the past. So,
but
I think everybody expected me to do something really high end, and I'm kind of happy not doing that. I'm kind of happy doing something that's just satisfying to me more than anything else.
Can a taco be high end?
What I mean, is this something you made at home? Like, where did you? How did it start? How did you get there?
My mother's had a Latin market since I was a very young kid, and I grew up around a lot of different Latin kind of ethnicities, Mexican, Salvadorian, South American, probably mostly South American. But this was definitely something that was, you know, since I was a kid, was kind of in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're all a little bit different. I do them all a little different than the traditional. So,
you
know.
Well, why don't you talk about some of them?
Wait. Let's start from scratch. So you're opening Taco Bamba.
Please, you don't please. Understand that? I just get flicked aside. Like
I know. Bang.
Like a bug.
Go away. Taco Bamba is opening up in Virginia.
Yes.
Where is it opening?
It's in Falls Church.
Okay.
Right off of Route 7. There's a Whole Foods market there right off when you got off of 66 in the Idlewood area.
Mm-hmm.
My mom actually has a Latin market right there, and we're opening next door.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And, you know, what I'm most excited about is that it's opening by my mom's market, and she's got this extensive butcher shop. And so I'll be able to use a lot of cool different kinds of meats and stuff that maybe a lot of taquerias don't get to use because
what is the name of
you
your
don't
mother's
move
market?
As much. Plaza Latina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be
Plaza Latina.
This is not in Spain.
That's Spain.
So that'll open up there, but that's not opening till after the new year. When do we think it's opening?
Late fall. We're still very
it is late
about
fall.
That.
You do know that,
yes,
right?
I know.
It's late fall right now. So.
Well, it could get later.
Right. It's the latest fall.
It's the latest of fall.
Yes.
But so you're doing this pop-up
At Blackjack, yeah.
At Blackjack. So how did that come about?
Well, Jeff's a good friend of mine. And
yeah, everybody says Jeff's a good friend of theirs. That doesn't
right,
mean much.
Right. Well, he's a really good friend of mine, okay. Obviously.
Wait, hold on a minute. Because you guys see, you're assuming everybody knows. We're talking about Jeff Black, and we're talking about Pearl Dive and Blackjack, which are on top of each other down on 14th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Great restaurants.
Well, Blackjack's closed on Mondays. And so I asked Jeff, I said, well, can I open it on Mondays? And, you know, and pop up Taco Bamba there one night a week and, you know, test out the menu and have basically just have a good time. I've been out of the kitchen for a while, so I'm happy to be back in it.
Well, so let me just ask you, how will the pop-up work? So when you go, so we were there for the party on Monday.
Right.
I mean, it was fabulous. Everybody was there and, you know, the tacos were terrific. But when the party's not happening, you go upstairs to Blackjack and then what?
You sit down and you dine, basically.
Okay.
It's going to be an a la carte menu, and I'm going to change it every week. And we're going to have specialty cocktails, and it's going to be more of a restaurant, albeit sitting at the bar and at High Tops and in the back at the bocce court.
So there'll be, will there be a menu?
There'll be a menu every week.
Okay, there will be a menu every week. Okay.
And we'll have some starters, some tacos, and a
dessert. Let's talk about what's in the tacos,
yes,
because there's some unusual combinations
of ingredients. This is so good.
You're eating pork and beef tongue this morning for breakfast.
I'm eating cow and pig tongue?
Yes.
A mix of their tongues?
Yes. We call it the crispy kiss. We couldn't get it too crispy, so it's a little bit...
It's delicious.
Foggy.
It's really... But I know you have something to say.
Nothing.
So you're eating a combination of tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a red chili aioli, some charred scallions, and some pickled onions.
It's fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's talk about your guacamole.
Yes.
It's really different. So how'd you come up with a grilled guacamole?
Well, like I told you, I grew up around a pretty predominant South American culture. And South American, Uruguayans, Argentinians, Peruvians, when you have a grill in front of them, they pretty much char and burn stuff a lot, you know. So I grew up around that. So I took the ingredients for a guacamole and I burned it all, and then I chop it up and mix it together.
It totally changes the.
It does.
Right. It adds some smoke. It adds a different level of. I think it's interesting, and I really like it. Somebody asked me the other day, how do you grill guacamole? Do you just spoon it all over the grill?
And yeah, I would guess, be like, yes, that's exactly what
I did. Yeah, I did.
Flip it like pancakes.
How did it fall?
I cut it into a square. I put it on like halloumi, and that's
exactly
what I do.
Exactly.
I call it a day.
It's a good idea.
Very, very
try
funny
that at home.
All right.
So how long will you be doing this pop-up?
Through the end of the year. Well, through December 17th, I think, right now is what we're talking about. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
What else besides tacos? But did my voice just break like a teenager?
You sound like you are.
That was nice.
What else besides tacos will we get at Taco Bamba?
Oh, we're going to have, basically the menu is going to be divided into three parts. We're going to have traditional tacos for the people who want carnitas and al pastor and carne asada and all the traditional ones that people love. We're going to have that. And then we're going to do kind of a more chef-driven page of the menu where it's all kind of more modern tacos, the kind of stuff you guys have been sampling. You know, I have a taco that's grilled octopus and sweetbreads and all kinds of different things that we're doing. And then we're going to have a section of the menu which is not tacos. And we'll do a burger, we'll do some wings, we'll do grilled corn, ceviches.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's going to be a lot to it. It's, you know, it's not going to go too far out of hand and out of the genre, but it's...
So will your place be a sit-down?
No. It's going to be a stand-up.
That's
what we're calling it.
Okay.
So it's a carry-out, basically, but we're going to have standing room bar along the walls.
Okay.
So it's going to be very dressed down and just very simple.
Lunch and dinner?
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Awesome.
7 days a week.
Man,
what are you
going to
do for breakfast?
Office.
All kinds of stuff.
Like?
Huevo rancheros, our own version of them. We're going to definitely do chorizo and eggs. All kinds. I mean, everything I can do, I will do.
So that can be, you know, I've been going to the Silver Diner for my breakfast meetings, but...
Not anymore.
You're in my neighborhood over there.
I'm going to go see Victor Albizu and Victor Alzubi and all those other people.
Albuzi.
Listen, congratulations.
Thank you. Very exciting. Delicious. Thanks for coming in.
Do you have a website up yet?
Yes, TacoBambaRestaurant.com.
Clever.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
I love the logo. The logo's beautiful.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we're going to move right into Vino Volo. We've got Tristan Kendi with us and Doug Tomlinson. Doug, are you on the phone?
I am. How are you?
Hi. How are you? Where are you anyways,
Doug? He's in California.
You're in California.
Waking up in wine country, Mendocino County.
Oh, yeah. Rub it in. Well, we have a hurricane, so the heck with you.
And we have margaritas.
Yeah.
So, and what is this, Taha? What do we have?
That's the, we'll call it the sangre.
The sangre.
Reposado tequila with Campari and Antica Carpano.
So, see, you have wine country and we have that.
Yeah, that's right. So, Vino Volo, until this new location in Bethesda, has always been in airports. And I was telling Tristan, we have a friend who was just in town who was making big noises,
lots of noises,
because that's the first place she heads when she lands in Seattle when she business travels. So how did it all come about? What was the battle plan?
Yeah, so I'm actually the founder and CEO of the company, and absolutely love what I'm doing. We opened our very first location, taking care of folks when they're traveling with a really interesting wine tasting experience, actually in the Dulles Airport. And it's been 7 years now since we did that. So we're pretty established in the DC metro area. And we have a lot of fans out in Bethesda and around there who've been telling us how much they love us, but how much they hate that they need to get a boarding pass to get to our location.
Right.
And so we said, you know, we're really trying to take care of, there's a lot of travelers that are hating life, and we were trying to take care of them across the country first, but someday we may really try to get back to you and bring Vino Volo to your neighborhood. And we're real excited that we're at that point, and with our first location in Bethesda.
Well, what drove that decision just to open up a bricks and mortar store outside an airport?
Well, all along we've wanted to be, our aspiration is to be the favorite wine destination, period. And the airport's just the place where we started that offer. And so Bethesda and now just seem to be the right time to do what we've thought all along would be a good idea, which is to take care of our guests whenever they want to go out and be with friends, taste some great fun new wines and some nice small plates in an approachable environment where they can learn more about wine from a company that really is passionate about finding small production wineries and bringing them to folks.
Well, so I guess we should flip it to Tristan and ask, because there's a lot of good local wine, particularly in Virginia.
Right.
How are you
curating your wines at the Bethesda store?
Yeah, absolutely. All of our stores around the country try to feature some type of local wines. Now they're making wine in all 50 states, believe it or not. So we've had
a lot of them.
Yeah, we'll be carrying.
I bet wines in North Dakota are really good.
I haven't had the pleasure.
I bet they're delish.
We will be carrying some Virginia wines as well as some Maryland wines. I have one that I've brought today from Anfield, which is down in Charlotte County, Virginia. Stainless steel fermented Chardonnay, beautiful wine. Occasionally, we'll put a flight on the menu that will feature some local wines as well. So, you know, really giving the opportunity for our guests to come in and sample what the local areas have to offer.
Well, so, Doug, let me just ask you, as you go to more of a restaurant kind of feel, how do you change the menu to reflect that? Or do you not have to?
Well, I mean, people are making a meal of Vino Volo already across the country when they travel. A lot of our guests actually say they try to do longer layovers, or they pick what airport they're going to.
And planning my travel around.
just to get their hands on our pork tacos or salmon rolls. But what we want to do is make sure that we have a broader menu outside on a street location. So the Bethesda Row location has about 50% more items than you would see in a typical airport location.
Okay.
But they're the same level of quality. It's still very much focused on small plates that you can do in a smaller or larger size for any of the items. And very much about wine country flavor and pairing with wine so that you can really really put together a fun wine tasting and food tasting experience.
So I guess this goes to both you and Tristan. I mean, how do you train your staff?
Well, I don't know if Tristan gave you his story, but I think it's a good one.
Said something about prison and a rodeo.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we train all of our staff.
Excellent.
We really do try to hire people with the idea that we're going to plant and grow them, much like a grower in wine country would plant and grow a vineyard, and really put a long-term effort and view into developing great people. So we bring people into our organization who already have a baseline passion and understanding of wine, and we run them through our own wine training and service training programs. And the idea is to actually grow from within. And so Tristan, for example, started in our Detroit location, already knowing a lot about wine and even a lot of local wines in Detroit. And he moved up the ranks as we developed him, and he developed his skill set to run the Detroit store and then relocated to run the Dulles Airport store before now stepping out to go and help us launch this Bethesda location.
And Doug mentioned passion, which is really the key. We actively, you know, not necessarily seeking out sommeliers and things like that, but people that really have a passion for wine and want to be immersed in the culture.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have to take a quick break. Doug, do you mind holding on? Just I know we kept you on hold for a little bit there. Do you mind holding on for a couple more minutes? All right.
Sure.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back talking more wine when we get back.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
As winter approaches, relaxing on a patio becomes but a memory. Or does it? Not at Penn Quarter's Postmodern Brasserie. They are transforming their upper courtyard into a cozy, winter-warm outdoor lounge. I'm talking couches, ambient lighting, heat lamps, and cozy warming blankets. You'll enjoy tasty treats, of course, from Chef Dennis Marin. Think sweet hot fondues and warm winter cocktails. Lots of libations to keep you nice and warm throughout the winter. Enjoy the post patio Tuesdays through Saturdays this winter from 4 p.m. to close. But mark your calendar. Saturday, November 3rd is the launch event. There'll be lots of complimentary tastes and lots of warm fun.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Before we get back to the gutty what's of the show, I just want to thank the sponsors. That's a Kurt Vonnegut word.
Okay.
I want to thank the people that make the show.
I wasn't born yet. That's way before me.
Abe Lincoln and I used to.
I know you guys were really good
friends. I do want to thank Georgetown Bagelry and the people at Neighborhood Restaurant Group. That's mm-hmm. the two Rusticos and Evening Star, Tallulah, Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key for sponsoring the show. Also, our friends at the Two Founding Farmers and the new Farmer Fisher and Baker.
Yep. Coming no, in the... no and. Farmer Fisher Baker.
Yeah.
One word. Say
I like
fast.
And. I like and.
I know.
All right. The Central Farm Markets out in Bethesda and Rockville. Mm-hmm. The Black's Restaurant Group and our friends at the Kimpton Hotel, the Kimpton Monaco. And then Post.
And don't forget now, Union Market.
And now Union Market. On November 11th. If you're not there, be square.
You're going to miss a good time.
All right. So let's get back to Doug and Tristan. Tristan just put two beautiful wines in front of us. Why don't you tell us about these?
The first, as I mentioned, is from Anfield down in Charlotte County, Virginia. This is a local wine, 100% stainless steel Chardonnay. No oak influence at all. So you mm-hmm. really get the true characteristics of the varietal showing through. It's been interesting for me coming down from Michigan, experiencing Virginia wines, Maryland wines for the first time, and really found some gems. We're looking forward to featuring a lot of those.
There's some really good. There's some really good wineries in Virginia. Maryland is still, I think, getting their legs, personally. But I think there are some really, really good drinking wines out of Virginia right now.
Absolutely.
So how did you go about finding these wines, and how are you creating the flights to go with the food?
Well, the Anfield was introduced. A lot of Vino Volo is just kind of creating a community of, you know, wine-loving people. And the guys down at Anfield, Steve and Mike, they were introduced to me and tasted through their wines and was really impressed by what they were doing down there. They haven't been around very long, only since 2006, but they're making some fantastic wines.
Well, I hate the fact
that we definitely have a goal of bringing small production wineries with great family stories to our guests, because that to us is really authentic wine country, and it's really fun to share these local gems with people, and we've come to be trusted by our guests as a place where you can always taste the local flavor wherever you go to find a Vino Volo.
Well, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I'm tasting this white right now, which you're calling a Chardonnay, but it's got no real Chardonnay notes at all. I mean, it's not oaky or buttery or anything. I mean, it's really clean and nice.
Well,
yeah, it's a great surprise, right? When you take the oak out of the equation on a Chardonnay, it turns into an entirely different flower.
And absolutely.
It's really fun to drink.
And this is something that's new for, you know, domestic Chardonnays. We're all used to the big oaky butter bombs, buttered popcorn, and things like that. And we're starting to see a lot of producers going more towards the less oak or no oak, which is kind of fun, because you're right. It tastes completely different than when you add a lot of oak to the equation.
Well, I mean,
but you don't have to worry if you are a big, wonderful vanilla, oak spiced, buttery Chardonnay lover. We definitely want to bring every flavor profile to our guests, and then we always have a Chardonnay that'll meet that description as well.
You can serve that Chardonnay to those people because I mean, to me, this is the kind of Chardonnay it's more French, which is what I prefer, instead of that big butter yellow. This is like nice and clean and can be drank with anything. Tell us a little bit about the red you poured.
The second wine is from Baileyana, which is out in Edna Valley near San Luis Obispo in the central coast of California. This is their Fire Peak Cuvée Pinot Noir. This is actually a wine that we're going to be featuring on tap. We're going to have about 30 wines by the glass at the Bethesda location, five of which are going to be in keg form, and we'll be able to pull down the tap and serve some guests some kegged wine. This is a new thing for the wine industry, a very green effort, because you're obviously not using bottles and labels and corks and all that type of thing. But it keeps the wine fresh for a really long time and is kind of novel
as well.
Well,
you can't get corked,
absolutely,
which is another issue. And I know Bandolero, Doug, we have somebody else in here, they have Prosecco on tap. But I'm sort of curious, I mean, being in the wine industry the way you are, do you think that this is a forthcoming trend? Are we going to see more and more wines on tap in restaurants?
I do. I think it's all part of the shift. Americans are becoming more and more comfortable with wine just being part of their lives, and they don't have to put it on a pedestal and decant every single bottle and use the largest bulbs they can find to drink it. And I think on tap is part of that trend. It's also very green, as Tristan mentioned. Our goal is really to make sure that the on tap program also comes in bottles, because you can't really take the tap home with you. And if you fall in love with something and you want to serve it to friends over dinner over the weekend, you do still want to have the bottle format.
Well, guys, unfortunately, we've got to wrap up, but I want to make sure everybody knows where the new store is going and when it'll open.
Yes, it's
So we're opening real soon, right after everyone cleans up from the rain. They'll be probably in the mood for a drink Friday, November 9th. And we're located 7243 Woodmont, it'll be both the wine tasting bar restaurant experience and a wine retail experience.
So is that up by Haleo?
It's on
the same block.
Between Haleo and Montemica.
Yeah, too bad you got such a crappy location.
We only want the best.
I know.
Well, you got it.
You're going to be moving money around with a forklift. That's a great spot. All right, congratulations, guys.
Doug, thank you for joining us.
Tristan, thanks very much.
Tristan, thank you.
All right. Let's go back to Taha.
All right, Taha, what have we got next?
Next one, we're here, this cocktail called Jose Malverde. It's a Vida Mezcal with cucumber, lime, agave, cilantro, and hellfire bitters.
Okay, and this is available
Is this a regular?